Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about their civilian career. Today's episode number 194 with Donnie Benjamin.
And I like to think too, just about everybody I meet is pretty purpose driven, and it's a type of purpose driven I haven't been involved with since I was in the Army. So I feel like that's especially valuable to veterans. You can go to a lot of places or work for a lot of things where it's just you check in and you check out. And you miss that higher purpose or the feeling that this camaraderie that with the people you're working with, that you all have a goal you want to get to. And I really feel like you get that in a lot of places in the blockchain space.
I believe this is the first time that I've had a guest on for a second time. Donnie joined me for episode number 186, where you talked about his transition from the Army to work in blockchain and Ethereum at a company called Consensus. He offered at the end of that episode to come back on the show to provide an overview of blockchain, Ethereum, Bitcoin, and that's exactly what we're going to do today. All the information will be in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.io. Let's dive into this interview. I really enjoyed it. The thing that stood out to me most was the purpose-driven nature of this space and how that might appeal to veterans. So let's dive into my interview with Donnie Benjamin. Well, my guest today, back from episode number 186, is Donnie Benjamin. And the last time I talked to Donnie, he was in Brooklyn or over in Manhattan. And now that he's speaking with me, just as a sign of what can change in just seven episodes worth of time, he's now in Chicago. But maybe, Donnie, you could start by letting us know what's going on, what's happened with this transition.
Moving over to Chicago to help set up a Consensus Chicago office, really trying to understand the blockchain community here, how we can add value, if there's teams interested in building with us. It's pretty organic growth, what makes sense. Pretty excited to be here, and thanks for having me on again, Justin.
Yeah, I really enjoyed our last conversation, and towards the end you'd offered to go through a primer or an overview of just blockchain and cryptocurrency and your perspective on the space and its history, and wanted to take you up on that. And so maybe just to start off, I know it's a big question, but I'm actually asking this question for personal reasons too. So I've asked three different friends who are some of the three smartest people I know, what is blockchain? They've given me great answers, and it still has not really sunk in and clicked for me. I feel like back in the 90s when someone must have been like, so what is this internet thing again? But I'm wondering, maybe you could just start off with the basics of what is blockchain, and don't be offended if I interrupt you with just kind of questions of things that I'm trying to understand more.
Sure, and I think it's important to keep in mind that most people also don't know how TCP/IP routing or packet switching work, which are the fundamentals of the modern internet, and they just trust that the internet works, right?
Yep.
So I think one of the reasons people get caught up in blockchain or trying to understand it at a deeper level is because there's coins or tokens associated with it or some sort of financial gain. I'd caution everybody to remember that. And it's also funny because when you talk about mining or, in Bitcoin's case or currently in Ethereum's case also, people get so confused about this mining coins. And I always ask them, well, how does your government decide how much money to print? And if you're in the United States, unless you're sitting in the meeting of the Federal Reserve, you don't know. Mm. And with Bitcoin and Ethereum, it's very transparent how these stores of value, these tokens, get created. There's a timeline. With Bitcoin, we know there's only going to be around 21 million. So it's very clear and transparent. It's actually more clear and transparent. It makes more sense than how most governments that I'm aware of decide how much money to print and when. So
I love that because. Yeah, I love the analogy with the internet because it's true. Like, I don't really still understand. I have been working in this space for nearly 10 years, everything internet technologies. I don't really understand the fundamentals of how the internet works. I don't understand that even the foundational elements of it. And yet, people are still able to, without that knowledge, be effective on it and utilize it. And I think that kind of maybe lowers my anxiety about this conversation of not feeling like that is the absolute most critical thing to be able to dissect the intricacies of how this works.
Right. But so maybe what is kind of important to understand is what makes it different than current databases, and how can that affect us in the future, and why is there so much hype and people building for it?
Yeah,
so,
and like what the opportunities are that it can unlock. Yeah,
exactly. And this, you know, there's so many areas when you talk about blockchain. There's so many areas to cover, and we probably won't get to them all because you can take one area and, you know, digital identity, and you can just go into it and spend, you know, days at a workshop just on that aspect of how blockchain will affect that. So it might also help to go maybe a little bit back to basics. You know, if we're talking 2008, 2009, financial crisis occurs, a person or persons named Satoshi Nakamoto releases a white paper, Bitcoin, the subtitle is like a peer-to-peer electronic cash system, and it's essentially this revolutionary idea that we don't need banks anymore. We don't need intermediaries to have trustless processes. So, you know, if you were to even Venmo me money right now, Justin, it would go from your Venmo to your bank to my bank to my Venmo, and then I would probably take it back from my Venmo to my bank. So there are these intermediaries, and I might have that a little backwards, but I think people get the idea. There's all these intermediaries at play that go into these transactions, and they try to take pieces of the transaction. And basically, Bitcoin proved out this idea that with cryptography and this idea of a blockchain where it's distributed ledger, where every transaction that's ever occurred is stored and you can't go back and change it. It's pretty powerful technology. So Bitcoin kind of proved out this idea of having this blockchain that's made up of pieces of a distributed ledger all put together, run by nodes on the network. If people have watched the latest season of Silicon Valley, the HBO TV show, I think it's pretty funny because it's spot on and it's how it mocks tech. But I mean, they do cover a lot of cool stuff about
this is, you know, maybe a silly question, but the sense of this distributed ledger. So what you're saying is basically let's take, I guess maybe Bitcoin, for example, every transaction that's ever occurred with Bitcoin, it is stored in basically like a public, record in multiple locations to prevent it from being interfered with. Am I somewhat on the mark on that? It's like,
let's take JP Morgan Chase as an example. You know, I'm gonna guess they spent billions of dollars a year securing their servers and their databases. And if they let that down, they're going to get hacked. I'm sure they get hacking attempts every second of every day. They're going to get hacked, and the global economy is going to absolutely collapse. But Bitcoin is proving out this idea that you don't even need a bank. You can you can transact billions and billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin over almost a decade without an intermediary there, just using technology. And every transaction that has ever occurred is stored across the nodes or the computers running this network, and no one can go back and change it. Mm. So that piece is what makes it why you don't need a bank in the middle to like reconcile a ledger, right? It's kind of like I found out all those skyscrapers on the other side of Manhattan in New Jersey are accounts reconciling ledgers amongst all the banks. It's pretty wild. There's not a shared database infrastructure throughout the world, And that's the thing, another piece when we kind of get into Ethereum, that I think people just have a fundamental misunderstanding of how IT works in the world. And that, you know, I think when we see futuristic movies, you know, we just assume there's a shared infrastructure everybody's using for instantaneous transaction, and that's just not true, right? You have tons of different enterprises selling different solutions. There's just not, you know, think of when airlines merge, right? You read about the horror stories of trying to get their two technical platforms to integrate, because they're just built on totally different foundations. So when we talk about, when we get into Ethereum, it's like, well, what if everything was built on one foundation that was super secure and transparent? That changes everything. And that also gets rid of the need for a ton of intermediaries. And technically, you know, if I want to build a better airline system on the same infrastructure, I could, and then an airline could adopt it, because there's no, the friction of changing is so minimum.
Yep.
And okay, I kind of took us off track.
No, that's great. And so, but I'm assuming that the two elements that are important with that, though, too, is that because there's not this massive infrastructure, this need to physically reconcile transactions, I'm assuming that that makes transactions able to occur faster and transactions able to occur at a much lower cost than anyone else can provide. Is that somewhat accurate?
Yeah, it's going to be cheaper, it's going to be faster, and you're not going to need somebody in the middle taking pieces of that, because they've established themselves as this intermediary who's able to take more and more value out of a system. You're basically, you know, getting rid of them. Or in some cases, you still need them, but they're just not able to extract as much value because they can't. Well, let's take music, right? In a blockchain world, a musician could distribute music directly to a consumer, and instead of giving 80% of it away to a record label, they could trust that the transaction, so I'm going to buy this song, or I'm going to buy the rights to stream it, or I'm going to use a streaming platform, and it's all trustless. The system does all the work. The system knows exactly how many plays I've done, and the payment to the artist is, you know, near instant. There's no messing with the books. There's no, you know, auditing how many streams you had. And ideally, then you have musicians who can actually, you know, afford to live in Manhattan because they're getting 80% or maybe 79% if the platform's taking 1%. But still, 1% versus 80% is pretty significant of that value. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I'm just thinking of the, you know, my sense is a lot of the people who, I don't know if this is still true, but like when this technology first became available, I can see why, and I think we talked about this in our last interview, like there are true believers behind this movement. I can see why this sense of transparency, of fairness, of a system that cannot be tampered with, I can see why that would have an appeal on a values level, and that a lot of the people who are working in this space, I'm guessing, are driven by those values. Like, I think we had talked about that democratization of like just really spreading the power and not having power centralized anywhere. So I can see how this is both a technology, but also I imagine a lot of people culturally believing in this as a way forward, as a society, as a species on the planet.
Definitely. I mean, it's a movement, and I heard a great quote. Someone was saying, a leader in the space was saying, I meet Republicans, Democrats, libertarians, socialists, anarchists, you know, extreme ultra-capitalists, and everybody sees something in this system that they love. It's like one of the most unifying movements I've ever seen or been a part of. And I think because people don't want to have to make a – people want to be able to trust each other when they do business. You know, people – okay, here's a good example of a, you know, blockchain digital identity. When we think about what happened with Equifax, right, one person's computer got hacked and 140-something million records got stolen. That's insanity, first off. First off, that we're even – you know, beholden to these credit agencies, I read a good, I think it was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal. It was basically saying, you know, when, if you sign up for your airline rewards program and they get hacked, like it's still awful, but technically you signed up for it. So, you know, there's a little bit on you, but the fact that none of us sign up for these credit agencies, they just collect information on us. We did nothing, check the box and our information was stolen. Because one person had bad security, or the company had bad security. That's insane. So if you think about taking back our identities, and on the blockchain, I'm going to have my identity stored. So, you know, on Ethereum, I have an identity. It's connected to me. So if you were to hack, if you were for some reason to get my private key or my face or whatever, you could technically take my information, but you're not going into the blockchain and taking 140 people's information. You're just taking mine, which is ideally, I think, how people would want it. And, you know, when I resume control of my identity, you know, and when I can access, so we have a team called Uport. They run a trial in Duke, Switzerland, where people basically had their ID on their Uport connected to Ethereum and were able to access government services instantly. So you think when I take control back of my identity, yes, it's good for government, but then, you know, you get, right now we're a product of, you know, if you're on Facebook, you're the product, right? In blockchain world, when you own your identity, maybe you selectively disclose certain attributes about yourself to advertisers. So, you know, you're a brown-haired male who likes snowboarding, then advertisers can pay you to look at, you know, even more specifically targeted ad if you choose, if that's something you want to be a part of. So it's a completely different mind shift, and I think people would much rather get paid to look at ads than having a company make a ton of money off of their identity.
That's so wild. I mean, let me just play this back, and it's like, so I'm thinking when I read a magazine, maybe 20% of that magazine is actually advertisements. And that is because someone, an advertiser, has paid the magazine because they believe, you know, the magazine, that a certain type of person reads it and they're trying to get in front of them. And so the magazine's giving me value. They're giving me articles. They're giving me all this stuff. But they're also making money off of me because I'm reading these ads. And what you're saying is, you know, this changes the equation, where if the company wants to get a hold of me, it's almost like paying me to reveal more of myself. It's like paying me to know more about me, to know if I would be a good fit. It's in some senses, it's removing the intermediary of whoever is selling the ads. Is that some correct interpretation of what you just said?
Sure. And I think it's really a scale of, do you want privacy, or are you willing to give up some of that for maybe getting some tokens and having more targeted ads that might work for you? You know, privacy is a huge thing, and, you know, something I was, you know, very ignorant of until I really started reading about the space is our identities are sold. I mean, you know, I don't think people realize, you know, when you browse the internet, your internet service provider is collecting everything you do and selling it. I mean, we are packaged up in our identities, and other companies make so much money off of what we do, and we really don't know about it. I mean, I've been reading about smart TVs that kind of trick you into allowing you to collect data on your viewing habits. And look, if you want to, you know, to me, it's a spectrum. If you want to be super private, if you think you have a right to privacy when you browse the internet, because you're paying an internet service provider a good amount of money a month and you feel like you should have privacy with that, great. But maybe you choose that, you know, privacy is not your biggest thing, and you really want, if you're going to have to look at ads, you'd rather get paid to look at them, that's fine too. But the thing is, we don't really have that on the internet right now, and what we do, and things that are connected. So we're trying to bring back, I think blockchain's also trying to bring back our identity to ourselves, but also let us have privacy in our lives again.
So when you're reading the news, there's just, I think in the last several years, there's been so much, I mean, longer than that, but there's been so much about privacy. As someone in this space, I'm sure, you know, just like everyone, it makes you upset and makes you scared and sad that all of this is occurring. And at the same time, you must see this as just such validation for the fundamental technology that you're working with and the opportunity it provides to enhance security and enhance privacy.
Exactly. And I don't think it's, you know, it's an extreme idea, right? I think if more people were just aware how much information is collected on them, I think they'd be in the movement too. It's just until you really start studying and understand, it's tough to really, comprehend the level of which this is going on. And I think just from a human level, does it bother me that some CEO is making $40 million a year because his or her business is selling aspects of my identity to the highest bidder? Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
So what is, maybe to switch gears a little bit, how would you explain Ethereum then? Like, what do listeners need to know about what Ethereum is?
Okay, good question. So Bitcoin is the digital token for the Bitcoin blockchain. And really, people are trying different things. People have tried for years, but really, the Bitcoin blockchain is really good at transacting Bitcoin. So young genius guy named Vitalik Buterin created this thing called Ethereum, which is taking the idea of a blockchain but allowing you to build basically a new internet, or what we call Web3, where you can do more than just transact Bitcoin. So there's this idea of smart contracts, which are neither smart nor contracts, they're just code, but they take that idea of trustlessness in a system and allow it to execute on the Ethereum blockchain near instantly. So Bitcoin, you know, I think originally the idea was it's a currency, now it's more of a store of value. Ether is the token that runs the Ethereum blockchain. Ether is a fuel. It's like you access Google services for free because, you know, you're the product in a way. They're getting paid off your identity. So in a decentralized internet, if it's going to run instantly and be a global computer, you know, there has to be a way for it to self-sustain. So this idea of you make small payments in Ether to run transactions. So I want to listen to music. There's going to be a little bit of Ether that it's going to be paid into the transaction to keep the system going. Does that make sense?
So what I'm taking from that is that it's almost like a fundamental technology to do different things. And depending on what I want to do, I'm almost paying a very, very small amount to do that one thing. So if I wanted to listen to music, if I wanted to execute a contract, if I wanted to do, you know, whatever else, I'm just putting that, I like the analogy of fuel, I'm putting that fuel into the system to get whatever it is I want out of it. Is that correct?
At the very basic level, yes. I mean, there are things being done to even decrease those transaction costs. But and you can have a private permission Ethereum blockchain that does not require that internally. But you know, if you want to do transactions to the public Ethereum blockchain, you would need some Ether. But yes, I think, you know, I just think about it.
And what is the, I guess, like, what is the advantage to using for me as a user? What is the reason that I would choose to go with, you know, paying Ethereum to this versus listening to, you know, you use music as an example, listening to music on Spotify? Like, what's the reason that I would want to pay something to go the Ethereum route?
Right now, you wouldn't, because the reality check of blockchains right now is a lot of this is still, you know, Ethereum still works. It's amazing, revolutionary technology, but it, you know, it has limitations in speed and scalability and security. I mean, privacy. So that's all big, right? Because everything's open. It's everybody can know what's going on. So you know, if you probably want to make some investments, you probably don't necessarily want everyone to know that. So that's kind of the trilemma of that's being solved. So there are real world limitations right now. Tons and tons and tons of smart people are working on solving them. But because of that, right now you would not choose this. I mean, we do have a great project called Ujo. People do use it, but for the average user who doesn't want to download an extension and then buy Ether and then use that Ether to buy tokens, and it's a complicated process. But in the future, you're going to probably choose to do it because, one, your favorite artists are going to want to make 79% more value out of a transaction, so they're going to go.
Yep.
The infrastructure to build on, it's going to be so much cheaper for developers to work on than Spotify. So you can imagine they're just, from an economic standpoint, it's not going to make sense. You know, and I think when you have a critical mass, when it's easy to use, when it's fast, when all the artists are moving over, I think then it would just become a no-brainer.
Now, I mean, I want to have you continue to explain this, but the thing I was thinking about with Ethereum, and again, I understand 2% of this, but a friend of mine is a corporate lawyer at a very, very big, well-known company, and she was saying, look, we executed a contract, we're a US-based company, we executed a contract with someone in Hong Kong, and literally it was a fast turnaround. The way that we had to execute that was we literally flew someone with a contract in their hand to Korea, South Korea, and they signed it and they flew it back. That was the most efficient way to be able to execute this form of contract. But she was saying with a technology like Ethereum, that could be done pretty much instantaneously. And that is that, first of all, am I remembering that correctly? Is that one of the potential applications of this technology, is like the fast execution of contracts that otherwise would take a very long time?
Sure. We have a great project called Open Law. They do have a lot of great demos on YouTube, which I recommend people look at. Because when you have a trustless system, and you know, my private key makes sure it's me and your private key makes sure it's you, and we've put basically code into these smart contracts that certain things execute when other things happen, it becomes near instantaneous. So, you know, the process, I haven't bought a house, but I hear it's, you know, horror story, it takes a long time. But really, if we just write a contract between, so I want to buy your house, Justin, we just put a contract in that escrows, you know, a certain amount of my ether, and then basically once we have a home inspector digitally sign the smart contract that's good, and you know, we get whatever other stamps, the title's been validated on the blockchain, then it's just an instant transfer of money, and then the title would then instantly, so it would say, if Donnie you know, has 20 ether in escrowed account and homeowner approves, then send ether to Justin, and Justin, your side would say, and then Justin send title to Donnie, and that'd be it.
That's so wild. So I mean, I think when you say that, I start to see the shadow of Ethereum. I start to see like the edges of what you're talking about, where that is one very, very, very specific use case that you just outlined, and one that I think a lot of listeners and myself can relate to, because, you know, you transact on a house, it is a long, cumbersome process. But if in essence you were able to greatly simplify that process, that one use case that you just articulated is a massive value. That right there affects hundreds of millions of people. And that's one, it's just like, my sense is that's a splinter of the overall opportunity with Ethereum. Like, you just outlined one use case that is massive financially and massive in terms of the people it impacts. And that's one of, you know, 100,000 different options of how Ethereum can be used. And that's, when you say that, I start to sense the size of the opportunity that you're dealing with, where it might not be fully here, but there's so many different offshoots of where this could go. And that's why sometimes I think of this, like, you know, in terms of the internet, of like, people must have been like, wow, like, email is one application. Oh, reading the news online is another application. Like, there's so many offshoots that give the fundamental technology value.
It's insane. You know, when you think of email, what if, you know, what if you had to pay a tiny sliver amount of Ether to send an email? How much would that decrease spam, right? Because right now it's free to spam millions and millions of people, but if it costs a little bit, even if it costs a little bit, it's going to significantly reduce, you know, theoretically, how much spam or phishing attempts or anything like that we get.
Oh,
and then,
man.
You know, I always want to put in, like, you know, reality checks in this, like, yeah, the homeowner one's a great thing, but even if the blockchain gets perfect, right, there still needs to be governments that agree that they're going to certify all, they're going to move all their titles digitally to the blockchain, and it's going to be accessible, right? So there's a whole, you know, for all these use cases, there's tons of stuff that needs to happen for it to be this perfect world. And, you know, I'm sure there's tons of municipalities where they still, you have to go into a file to pull up a title, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's another aspect. But yeah, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the way business and society changes and the way we interact with each other, you know, it's huge.
Could you give just maybe one or two other use cases? For me, that's like helping me understand, like, the email thing is awesome. I'm so sick of spam email, and it's like, wow, like, that does actually make sense. If people were paying a very tiny amount of money, they couldn't just mass email hundreds of thousands of people. And the real estate example made sense. Are there any other examples that come to mind of things that people are trying to do with Ethereum as a foundation or blockchain as a foundation?
Wow, I mean, I just about every single industry, people are trying to do things. You know, I think a great example for government, I mean, to just dive into government services, right? Think, you know, we still hold our identities on these plastic cards. It's crazy. And some of them are, you know, you can easily forge. And when you change addresses, you have to go order another one. If you want to prove residency, you have to, or if you want to get in, use government services, you might have to prove residency through that. But what if you were validated through the government on a blockchain, and then when you changed your address, it just updated instantly, or you moved, it just updated instantly. We think, you know, a truly paperless world is possible in blockchain, right? Clearly that did not happen with Web 2 or even the internet. There's still tons of paper. You still need to fill out tons of forms. You still need to get mailed plastic cards that are validations of who you are. But if you can get rid of all that because your identity is so secured through the government, and changes happen instantly, and you can go to a museum for cheaper because you've quickly proven you're a resident of somewhere, I mean, you can think of how that works. It is crazy. And then, I really like the idea of this idea that, you know, in blockchain world, you know, we have a project called Vine. It's a supply chain. But if you're a massive company and you're tracking everything on the blockchain, so you're proving, like right now we take marketing on the labels as proof that it's real. But I don't know where that fish really came from. I don't know if my organic vegetable is truly an organic vegetable. There's no real, we're taking so many people's words and supply chains get mixed up. And, you know, I've heard absolute horror stories from marketers about how a lot of the stuff we see and read is not true, especially when it comes to food and nutrition. But if you've, you know, proven through an immutable ledger that something came from somewhere, and then a company validates instantly how many things get bought and sold, and, you know, paychecks are on, salaries and operational costs, then you can instantly audit a company 24/7. Which I get excited about that because I think, you know, Jamie Dimon, Warren Buffett have, you know, talked about companies are so incentivized to do things on a short-term basis at the expense of, you know, even longer-term value to shareholders and society. So if you could change this idea where you're instantly auditing, you're instantly seeing things, then maybe that has an impact on this idea that every 3 months you have to show growth or your stock price goes down, something like that. So you think about the fundamentals of the markets shifting in a more favorable way for both companies and society. I think there's so much there that can be done.
That's so wild. I I appreciate the things that you're saying, but I think what stands out even more for me is just the excitement in your voice is just is contagious in terms of just the possibilities and the opportunity to make things better, like the opportunity to say, like, there's so many things that don't function well or that don't function properly, and this is a potential to fix a lot of them, or at the very least to bring much more transparency and much more trustworthiness to all of these things.
And from a economic perspective, if this we get this right, the capital that's going to be formed and brought into the world is going to be unlike anything we've ever seen. And that's going to go to everybody who wants to build on this or have a part of it. And everybody's going to be able to capture more value out of every transaction. So it's just this amazing, possibility of hopefully the near future of what can happen. It's really exciting. It's motivating for many different reasons.
Part of what I'm hearing though is that the visual I get on this is like the amount of friction that is in this system. Or so, like with the artist example, you're saying if there is 80% of an artist's value is going towards labels or different people like that, like you're removing friction, like you're freeing up less of the value is lost in the throughput of the system, and more is retained by the people creating things, people adding value. It just seems like it's fundamentally removing friction from a system.
That, and you read about miscounts in streaming services, or Facebook saying, "Oh, we overstated how many people actually looked at your ad." That goes away, right?
Yeah.
So you're able to trust. Not only are you able to trust the camera in the system, but you're able to trust the camera in the system without giving tons of money to the system that's trying to count it for you.
That's wild. Well, what else should we know? I know we've got a couple minutes left here. And I'm empathizing with the fact that, like, I'm sure the things that we're covering right now, any, like you said at the start, any single facet of this, you could probably find 10 hours worth of explanation on YouTube. But I'm just kind of curious from a high level, what else have we not talked about that you think it would be interesting for people to know?
Well, I think, I do want to reiterate the reality check that there are significant limitations to blockchain technologies now, but the brightest minds are working to solve them. We're cautiously optimistic. And I also would encourage everybody to give some truth, because I think cryptocurrencies, right, human beings have been scamming each other since the beginning of time. So the idea that there's scams in the crypto world, there's scams in the normal world. There's scams in the normal stock market. There's scams everywhere. So, I think, the media gets driven to highlight all the scams in crypto space. So I'd encourage people, really learn about the profound fundamental impact, positive impact this technology can have on the world. Ignore the scammers. Don't give them the time of day. I think, unfortunately, Bitcoin started to get a bad rap because it was used as payments in the dark web, Silk Road, for buying drugs and other awful things. That was an unfortunate first active use case for Bitcoin. The technology behind it is so much more than that. It can be so beneficial to society. So don't let people think that, Bitcoin's just something you buy, or your cryptocurrency is just something you buy illegal substances with. Talk to your congressman about making sure your state has, a lot of states are coming out with really good crypto regulation because regulators are understanding the profound positive impact on the technology. But I think the more people that understand it, the more people that get involved, I think it's important.
Well, Donnie, I appreciate this. I think this is like the 194th episode. I think you're the only person I've had on twice, and so you've been especially generous with your time. And I think that what stands out for me, I think what helps me is the examples you gave just really start to shine a spotlight on how many exciting opportunities there are here. And in my conversation with you and Stephanie and the other people in this space, it does seem like this is an opportunity where, you know, veterans, people on active duty listening to this, there is a big opportunity here. This has not been a space that's been around for a long time, so it's not like you're playing catch up. And as you're saying, there's obviously a lot of risk in this space, but a lot of opportunity. It's a little bit of the Wild West, and there's it is continuing to grow. And I think it's a really valuable industry for veterans to look at because you know, they can go there with tenacity, they can go there with a lot of hard work, and they can play catch up on learning all of these things, but potentially play a big role in what seems like could be a major fundamentally shifting technology for society.
And I like to think too, you know, just about everybody I meet is pretty purpose driven. And it's a type of purpose driven I haven't been involved with since I was in the Army. So I feel like that's especially valuable to veterans. You can go to a lot of, you know, places or work for a lot of things where it's just you check in and you check out and you miss that higher purpose or the feeling that this camaraderie that with the people you're working with, that you all have a goal you want to get to. And I really feel like you get that in a lot of places in the blockchain space.
That's great. Well, thanks again for your time on this, Donnie.
Yeah, thanks, Justin.
I hope this was helpful for you. There are about four other interviews related to the blockchain space at beyonduniform.io. If you would like more in this space, please drop me a note. Let me know. Would love to be know that you want me to continue digging in this path. I feel like at this point we've probably covered the basics here, and so I'm going to move on to a couple new industries, but keep the feedback coming. As always, at beyonduniform.io, you'll find our coaching program. It's a great way to discover your values and what you might want to do next in your career, whether you're on active duty or whether you've been out for 10 years. There's also many other episodes there, an opportunity to donate, and an opportunity to leave a review on iTunes, which is always greatly, greatly appreciated. Take care and see you next week.